The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Here we are, just 3, 4, 5 months later. Across the board, there are stocks that everybody seemingly was talking about 6 to 12 months ago. They're down 30, 50, 70%. So, you know, I don't know how anybody can expect a quick fix in this. I think it's a lifetime. I think it's going to take a generation. I think things have to get worse before they can get better.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was Peter Grandis. He's going to be joining me in a second. You know him. He's been with us for a long time here. And I think about him as I see what's happening with this economy. I mean, we're chugging along, right? But inflation is hitting everywhere. I don't know if you like coffee. If you go grab a coffee somewhere, you better strap on your seatbelt or bring a few extra bucks. Coffee prices, I just read, are going up, right? The cost of coffee is going to go up. And I don't know if you are an Amazon Prime person, you like that free shipping because of the pandemic, maybe you got tuned, you know, plugged into it, or you like Amazon, the movies or whatever you get to watch. Guess what? If you're an Amazon Prime member, I got some bad news for you. Your annual membership fee is going to go from $119 a year. They're jacking it to $139. $139 a year. So that's inflation. If you have a monthly subscription, you know, maybe what's that break down to? What, $12.99 to $14.99? But still, if you do the monthly subscription, it's a lot of money. $14.99 across the course of the year. CNN Business reported that Amazon is saying that it's increasing the price because it expanded Prime membership benefits, such as they've added Prime Video content, they've expanded free day shipping. But it's also going to, you know, I think compensate for the cost of labor and transportation. That's why they're probably raising the price, which means, of course, that even though wages might be going up, inflation is going to eat away at that wage gain. So, just look at your next Amazon bill. We'll see how high it is. The Department of Labor, too, they came out with a new jobs report today. And they say that it blew away expectations, and that would be an understatement. On Wednesday, payroll processor ADP, they said that they were expecting there'd be, around 300,000 fewer jobs in the economy. They really had expectations that were, because of COVID, Omicron, everything else, that 300,000 less jobs. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and I was surprised this morning. I consume news very early in the day, very early to see what's happening overnight and what's coming. The job numbers didn't come out yet. When they came out, I had to do a double take. I thought, did I misread the first report or am I missing something here? The report today is that there were, get a load of this, almost 500,000 jobs created last month. 467,000 jobs to the positive, not 300,000 to the negative. That's a difference of about 767,000. I hope Peter can explain that one to me because I don't get it. On top of that, the government also said that, look, November, December numbers, they were up nearly 700,000 jobs, you know, more than they had previously reported. Is it true? It could be. I don't know. But Peter, as I said, is going to be joining me in a minute, and I want to get plugged in, too, because we hit a grim milestone here in the country. As you probably know, our national debt hit $30 trillion for the first time. $30 trillion. We crossed that, and that's huge. To me, it's almost inconceivable. If you ever see these debt, calculators or debt chart graphs where the thing's just ticking away, you should see how our national debt is increasing. One way to visualize it, somebody said, is you take $1 trillion, right? The number's so big. If you spent $1 million a day, imagine spending, I'd love to spend $1 million a day, right? Could you even do it, right? If you could spend $1 million a day since Jesus was born, you still would not have spent $1 trillion. Next time somebody says, I don't know, $1 trillion, how much is that? Say, try spending $1 million a day since the time Jesus Christ was born, right? Christmas 2,000 plus years ago, you still would not have spent $1 trillion. Our national debt is 30 times that. It's an inconceivable number for me. I tried to get my head around it. Besides being such a huge amount to repay, there's another problem that we're going to be facing, the interest on that debt. So in order to cool down inflation, the Fed is going to raise interest rates, and they're going to do it soon. That means that interest rates are going to go up, you know, and all those loans, you know, it's the U.S. is taking out to finance its budget. And that means, you know, more repayment is going to go to interest rather than principal. So a lot to talk about. We've talked about debt in the past with Peter, and you know, even with the debt out there, the Wall Street indices, they continue to climb. Even after Facebook's rout the other day, they lost a half a million users. The Nasdaq's climbing back up. I don't get it. I really don't get it. My guest, Peter Grandage, probably has better answers than I do. He is known as the former Wall Street whiz kid and is here to give us some insight and some analysis. I hope you'll follow him. His website's pretty easy. It's petergrandage.com. You can sign up for his free book. You can get his emails, and you can learn a lot about what he's reporting on. petergrandage.com. Peter, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Good to be back, Drew. It's been a while.
Peter has been. And this news, I mean, I'm kind of confused, to be honest. I try to follow this. I thought I had a solid understanding of how these things kind of work. But I don't understand the job reports, for example. Just 24 hours ago, they were expecting 300,000 fewer jobs. We see almost 500,000 more. They're saying in January and December the same thing. What's going on? How do you explain that?
Well, let me just make a minor correction for you. The ADP number was an actual number that they reported on Wednesday. Their payroll survey showed 300,000+ loss. Right. It wasn't an opinion on what they thought today's BLS number was going to be. That was their actual number. So there's a true discrepancy. It's probably the widest that I can recall between ADP's actual number and then, of course, the government's number. Now, the government's number had a lot of things that impacted it to make it so out of the box. Really, no one, even the highest forecast, wasn't close to the actual number. They did a few things like they normally do. First of all, they did some correcting of population figures going back 10 years. They've done some major seasonally adjustment. They make decisions on theories that, for instance, always before, they always assumed when you had the January number that the temporary employees that were always hired in October, November, December at stores for Christmas help and all, they would do a seasonal adjustment assuming they were let go. Well, they didn't do that this year. They kind of kept them in. And I think next month you'll see that change. And then they just radically changed their seasonally adjusted numbers. Yeah. In fact, I know a very good economist. I believe it or not, there are a few. He used the figuring that they used just a year ago with the same data that was given today, and we would have actually had a small job loss. So I think what you'll see, and you also made one other notation that you talked about, they did bump up November, December. Yeah. But what the media didn't cover, the clients that they changed from March to June were 200,000 more than the bump up in November, December. So literally their change for all of 2021 actually lost 200,000 jobs. But the media didn't, you know, pick up on that. And so
very strange. There was a New York Times reporter I was reading today that they called this a very weird report. And she cited these huge headline numbers. She said, look, 6 million people are out of work due to COVID, right? I mean, COVID. Yet there's this super fast wage growth. I think it was 5.7%. And inflation is running above that rate. So that wage growth isn't going to help anyone out. What's going on? Are they fudging numbers? How do you read this? How do they come up with these numbers?
Well, there are a lot of conspiracy people up there, and I don't think it's been any one administration. I think there's always a tendency by the government workers to put the best foot forward. That's why I tend to look at the middle of both of them. I sooner personally believe ADP. I don't think they have motives that same government may have to put out numbers a certain way. But I think you hopped on perhaps the most important piece of the news today, and that was the dramatic increase in wages. And when you combine that with a dramatic shortage of products and services that are not being able to be met because there's a shortage of various different things all across industry. Drew, you can just talk to anybody you know in different businesses and they'll tell you, oh, I can't get this. This is back order. I can't make this because I don't have that. So when you combine that with the so-called retirement of people that disappeared, wages going up, shortages. Remember now, just as we were told just a year ago that inflation was, remember that magical word that's gone, mm-hmm. transitory?
Yeah, right.
The shortage stuff was supposed to be gone by now, too. Remember, it was just a matter of getting some more boats into the docks and this and that, and we'd all be fine. Well, that's not the case. We're seeing bigger back orders. We're seeing more difficulty of delivering food. We're seeing food prices go up. So all in all, that number might be somewhat satisfactory to some people today. Right. I don't think it changes the direction we're heading, and that's not a good direction, obviously, you know, in my opinion.
I don't know whether you can answer this or not. I mean, like I was sharing the other day that, you know, my wife and I, we need a new washer and dryer, right? So I figured, okay, you might have to wait a week. Maybe you go to a big box store and get it or wherever, order it online. They're like months out. And I'm thinking, is that supply chain or is there something more to the picture?
Well, it's everything. Think about it, Drew. I mean, now, you know, we've seen the left media avoid this great study that came out that showed that basically the lockdowns didn't do anything what we were sold on that they would do. They really didn't really change the net results, and yet they caused all sorts of economic, social, and political problems. But one of the things is when you shut down in the way that we did, it's kind of like if you think of a factory line, the guy at the end here really can't do anything till the guy over here back here does something. And that's throughout different industries, that's what the problem is. And with the shortage of help and raw materials and all sorts of other issues, we are at the same time seeing inflation go up. And listen, the Fed is behind the curve. And you talked about the biggest problem, again, something that you and I have spoken about, is that if they're going to raise interest rates, then you run into the problem of can you keep servicing the ever-increasing debt? Because at $30 trillion at 5%, we'll owe $1.5 trillion in interest expense. And the best year ever in 2019, the government took in about $3.2 trillion in taxes. So half the money that we would take in that the government does would go just to pay the interest expense. So it's not a good outlook, at least in my eyes.
So we had a listener just call in, and my call screener said, hey, they have a great way of explaining how big $1 trillion is. They said a million seconds is 12 days. A trillion seconds is 32,000 years. Our debt has crossed $30 trillion. And you and I have talked about national debt for, you know, quite a while here. The national debt, where it's at, what kind of impact is this going to have on the company? We've got a strong economy. We're a strong nation. Is this something that we'll ever get a grip on? Is it too big now? Does it get defaulted on? What happens as this, as $30 trillion turns into $35 and then $40
trillion? Well, there are a lot of secular reasons to be concerned, but as you know, and what helped change my life and in my conversion that you speak of and so forth, was to accept really the only solid certainty data and information that one can count on, which is based in our Holy Bible. And in the Bible, there is not one positive word about debt. And people say, well, why do you tie the Bible into about money? Well, guess what? You know, if they haven't heard it by now, the creator, whoever, the author or authors of whoever you want to believe was the authors of this book, a great book, more influential than any other book ever, has talked more about matters of finance and debt than even they have about heaven and hell and praying. So, and there's not a positive verse in it. And you know I've taken for years, and I've spoken to your listeners for years, that a less is more attitude is appropriate. Now, that doesn't That's not a popular mode in the financial service world, to tell people to step back, maybe not do this, maybe not do that. And, you know, like I always told you, that's why my clientele cut of the pie always has shrunk, because there's a certain amount of people that just don't want to hear things like that. But you bring up a very good point. I view it as, if you remember the old movie, you may be old enough to remember, called Failsafe with Henry Fonda when he was the president. And the plane got to the point where he couldn't convince it to turn back, and then, you know, what happened, you know, with Moscow, and it was at the height of the Cold War. We're past that point. I don't think there's an ability, Drew, I haven't been able to see anybody present one, that we can reverse this without going through a very, very serious and troubling time, I believe, for at least a generation. But the real problem, Drew, is that me, someone who's 65, I'm not going to pay half as the price as my child is, and if she ever has a child. Those are the people that are going to be dramatically impacted at a time, Drew, when both politically and socially we've gone 5, 7, 10 steps backwards as well. So when you combine all these things, it's very hard for me to be paint a rosy picture, other than the greatest news is, as Catholics and Christians, is our internal life, and that one's really need to focus on. But the life that I suspect that is going to be for us is going to be very, very challenging, to say the least.
So your solution, just from a spiritual perspective, is, you know, disengage from debt, give back to God, and as a nation, hopefully we get it right.
Well, let me just move one up. You know that I believe the greatest single thing anyone could ever do is tithe. Tithing to me, and, you know, it's one of the main reasons I come on to Relevant Radio. It's not a matter of doing business. It's a matter of giving back, and also hoping that people recognize Relevant Radio and places like it need to be supported. And it's the one place in Scripture where God is very challenging, in Malachi, where he literally, God tells us, if you tithe, I will reward you 7 to 10-fold. And everybody I know that actually did it, I don't mean just one time, write an extra check, develop a lifestyle of tithing. And tithing doesn't necessarily always have to be in money terms.
Right, exactly.
It can be through sweat equity and things of that nature. And I just think you have to take that less is more attitude. I've told you, still with the counseling that my group does, I still see 7 or 8 out of 10 families at all walks of life, at all financial levels of income, living a lifestyle that's probably at least one level above where their finances, at least from a godly perspective, would support. And the more people I meet that do take that step back and take that less is more, not only do they end up getting their financial house in order, but they all say the same thing. Every single one. I just had another one today. Peter, the peace of mind that I have from it is really has to be coming from the Holy Spirit. I never felt this at peace. I'm happy I'm no longer in that rat race thinking I have to make more money equals more happiness. And Drew, that was really created between Wall Street and Madison Avenue. You can watch the commercials today of all the different financial service firms and all. They somehow make an illusion that if you come with us and you have a certain amount of monies, we're going to turn it into this and you live happily ever after. And that isn't what God calls us to do. God calls us to tithe.
Yeah.
He then calls us to be good with our money, if at all possible, not to be in debt. If we are in debt, to make it a good debt, and we are also to be forgiving in some incidents of that as well. But all in all, we become a society that really is, you know, that keeping up with the Joneses has gone too far. And the country has lived way past that, as you just said. The amount of debt, Drew, when I started in the business, we counted our debt in the billions. I never imagined $8 trillion, let alone $30 trillion.
I know.
And it's not something you shake your hand and you walk away from and it goes away. It's something that's going to have to be paid. Yeah. And the more we wait and the longer and higher it goes, the tougher it's going to be, not just for us, but our children and our children's children.
Yeah. Well, let's do this. I have a few minutes. If you want to join us, and I'll go to the phones in a quick second, it's 888-914-9149. You can call now and get in. And we'll take a call or two at least. 888-914-9149, and I'll get you on the air. Just one final thought on the tithing thing. I thought of you. I was about 2 weeks ago. I was having dinner with a friend. He's very successful. He's an international business guy, and I was sitting down to dinner with him. And you know, all he can think about is money. right? This guy, everything's money, 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 you know? And he said something to me that really struck me though, because even though he thinks about his future and his retirement, he's not greedy. He's a very generous person. And I was struck by what he said to me. He says, Drew, every time I give money away, every time I'm generous with it, it always comes back. I mean, you can never outgive God. And I said to him, I said, I could not agree with you more. I've seen it over and over and over again in my own life. Times I thought, oh, I shouldn't do this, or I really can, or I should spend this money on something else. God has found a way, and it's not always dollar for dollar. I don't, you know, give $1,000 and there's 10,000 come back. Sometimes it's like that. But sometimes it could be, you know, getting a surprise, you know, IRS, you know, or an insurance refund or a tax rebate, or who knows, you know, getting something on sale and saving a couple $1,000s. Who knows? But God can surprise you the way he gives back, but you'll never, ever outgive him. And that man is successful. And I really believe the level of his success came because he was generous like that. And I got to be careful. I don't want to sound like we are this health and wealth gospel. I don't want to preach that all the time. You know what I mean? Because I believe in suffering and sacrifice. And that gets mixed into the thing too. But I thought of that man and what he had to say. And I was just like, yeah, he's right on. And I thought of you, Peter. Let me go to Heather real quick because we only have a moment or two left. Heather is listening in the city of Oregon. Hey, Heather, good afternoon.
Hello. I have a question about buying a house. Because from growing up, honestly, my dad has been listening to Relevant Radio, and he was always instilling in me that debt is bad, debt is bad, debt is bad. But it seems like there's no way as like a young parent to buy a house without going into debt. So is there like a good way to do that? Is there advice on how to approach that? Because
it's a great question. That's a great question. So let me hold you on that point just for the sake of time, Heather. Good debt versus bad debt, Peter. I mean, of course, no debt is great, but you know, everybody, there's how many people have mortgages? They kind of need that. Your thoughts for Heather on whether or not getting a mortgage for her family so they can have a home is a good thing, or
getting a mortgage is nothing wrong. Getting a mortgage that's too big that puts you under enormous stress, so you can live in a so-called bigger house versus one that may be a little smaller and in a little bit different neighborhood. That's the difference, I think. I don't think it's that you can never be in debt. Certainly, it's better that you build equity versus just keep paying rent and have nothing to show for it. So that is especially when rates are so low. It's the problem has happened is as much as rates came down, the affordability of houses outstripped, went so far up that even the benefit of lower rates has caused it even more difficult for younger people to get into homes. Yeah. And that's been a problem. But I wouldn't say just because you and your father was prudent overall to get it's yeah. how much debt you take on. And, you know, to live in a house that maybe if you pay less, it'd be easier to support. It may not have all the things you want, but you won't be under the stress each day of can I afford to make the payment next month.
That's true. Heather, thank you. You know, Maggie worked with Dave Ramsey's group for a while, and he always said 15 years. Maggie, what was the comment? He said 15 years are better than 30 for you? Or
He always advocated if you're going to get a mortgage to try and stick with the 15 instead of going 30 year. Yeah,
if you can do it. Hey,
yeah,
Pat,
that's always good. And making an extra mortgage payment, principal payment each year,
yes.
if you can do it, is another good thing to
yep.
do.
Yep.
Pat in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Good afternoon.
Yes, hello. I really am enjoying hearing what he has to say about debt. I think it's so important not to be into debt. And I haven't been, but we live not necessarily having computers and so forth. We have an antenna on the roof. We have regular landline with an answering machine, no other technology. When we were having our children, I decided to stay home so we could carpool. I could sew kids' clothes. We, yep. you know, did all these kinds of things and lived within our means. And when we bought this house here, it's a big house, it was 12% interest back during the Carter years. Yeah. I think we're going back there, actually. But we refinanced as we went along, and we lived for a year with a card table instead of yeah. going into debt to buy a kitchen table and chairs. So
right.
depending on your, you don't have to live up to the Joneses. You can live within your means, and you have this peace about you, and we tithe. And I didn't think it would be possible to do that, especially after my husband passed away, but I still tithe, and I think the Lord blesses that. So
amen.
I really appreciate what he had to say about that, and I think living within your means, you have this peace, you can tithe, you just trust
amen.
In the Lord more, I think, and you don't have to live with every single device that's out there for millions and millions of dollars, and you have more time.
Yeah, Pat, thank you for those words. So live within your means and give back to God. I think it's a great formula. Peter, I'm going to give you final thoughts. I know we're up against the clock here.
Well, I think we're finally seeing the greatest financial bubble start to lose air. I think, you know, it's not going to go straight down, but I think the best times in financial markets have been behind us. I still think there's some speculative things that are still people are running into that maybe they should reconsider. But I, like it said, less is more. Find your financial advice, not from Peter Granich's book or some other guys who's come and go. Read Scripture. I think your answers and understanding of what tithing is can go a lot further than anything that some financial network may be telling you.
Amen to that. Hey, check out Peter Granich at his website, petergranich.com. Check out the former Wall Street whiz kid. That's his book. You'll love his story. Highly endorsed by tons of very prominent people. And Peter, thank you. We'll catch up again soon. Thanks for the wisdom and the insight. Always good to talk
to you. Thank you, Drew. God bless.
Right. Hey, enjoy the Super Bowl. We don't talk, okay? All right, I got to take a short pause. I will be back in just a moment. Stay with me. Our conversation continues right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Yeah, you got me going, that's for sure. We only have about 30 minutes left to spend together today. If you missed any of the conversation, you want to get plugged into something maybe you only heard a little bit of, dive deep. Check out the broadcast. Maggie will have today's show up probably about an hour after we sign off. She's got to do some editing and upload all that stuff. But you can also find us at relevantradio.com. Just go to the Drew Mariani Show, and there you can stream or copy the link and send it to somebody else or anywhere podcasts are heard. And I hope you will follow the show. And if you are new to it, I am delighted to be here with you. I always try to look at a myriad of issues that are unfolding in the world and ultimately get you plugged into the most important issues of the day. One of the things that I've been following, and I got to be honest, you know, like I try to understand, I try to dive deep into a lot of these issues and comprehend those, but there are certain issues that sometimes are difficult. One of those is cryptocurrencies for me. This whole blockchain technology and how it works and the future of crypto and where different nations are on this. Is it going to be the future? I do want to look at it. I want to look at this. I had a guest who's going to be joining me, a guy named Bill Oliveri. I probably had him on a year, 2 years ago, maybe three. I forget how long ago. We talked cryptocurrency, and I'll never forget. He says to me, Drew, you should get some Bitcoin. Get some Bitcoin. I'll send you a wallet with some Bitcoin. Start investing in it, right? I wish I took him up on that because I think Bitcoin at the time was just a couple thousand dollars, maybe five at the most, but it might have even been less than that. Bitcoin has gone over 50,000. It was, I think, as high as 60 at one point. I don't know where it is today. I think it reached an all-time high of 67,000, if I remember correctly, per coin. That was in November. I think last month I saw it down somewhere around 37,000 a month, but it's probably trading 40,000 somewhere in that range. I saw a report, and maybe you're investing in cryptocurrencies. If you are, check this out. Bloomberg reported that the federal government is getting ready to look at a comprehensive strategy for dealing with cryptocurrencies. Right now, cryptocurrency basically runs on its own, right? It's completely subjected to market forces. And as a result, it's volatile. Like I said, Bitcoin was at 67,000, then down to 37,000. You know, if you like roller coasters, then go ahead and take a ride, right? But what's the government going to do? How are they going to get on board with this? Is there going to be a some sort of federal coin from the U.S. government at some point in time? Will Bitcoin be the standard? You know, some of these terms will break down for you too, as Bill brings some clarity to the conversation. You heard me use the word virtual coin, right? And that's the whole deal with this currency. That's why, in some respects, you know, it's I don't have X amount of dollars that are backed by X. You know, it's this is virtual. You know, there's nothing physically exchanged here. So, you know, you probably use a credit card or debit card to make your purchase, but that's always tied to real money, right? So you go to the bank, you get cash from your account, you use it to make purchases, or you're withdrawing from the ATM because you're going out or whatever. That's not how crypto works. It was intended to serve as an anonymous medium of exchange. So you could have this flow of financial transactions without relying on any sort of central bank, right? Any central bank money or trusted third-party intermediaries. And as a result of it, you know, some of the underworld, you know, some of the some industries, it's crime basically, found it a good way to make transactions. You know, it's anonymous, but not so much anymore. Government doesn't like the fact that all of these transactions are taking place without them getting their share. The IRS is not getting their share. So as a result of it, I mean, crypto is growing. There are a lot of people investing in it. My daughter, who's only 23 years old, 24 years old, she told me about a friend of hers, a guy she went to college with a couple of years ago, who invested in Bitcoin, right? He just bought a $400,000 house. It's like, and those are those dream stories you hear about. In fact, I heard about a guy who accidentally had a hard drive. He was mining crypto. This was years before, you know, it was really worth nothing. People were mining this stuff and you couldn't really do a whole lot with it. And he spilled some soda on his computer, and he took the hard drive out. He was kind of a techie guy and had a different drive. And one night, his wife, I think, was cleaning up or whatever, and they threw the hard drive out. And it ended up in a landfill somewhere. The thing's worth $500 million. But that money's gone. It's lost, you know. There are a lot of other currencies. You'll hear the word Bitcoin. There's a lot of other virtual coins that are out there. And some governments are even getting in on the action. But my question for you and for Bill is, will this become the future? Will it be a new standard for exchange of our goods? Are we going to move away from paper and coin? You know, are we going to go to the virtual? I'm delighted to have Bill Oliveri with me. He's a owner and managing director of Senecal Capital Management, which invests, well, I got to be honest, heavily in Bitcoin and blockchain and cryptocurrency. So there is nobody better to talk to about this. And I'm delighted to have him here with me to give us some perspective. Bill, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm delighted to have you here. I think about you all the time when it comes to cryptocurrency, because I never forget you made an offer. Drew, I'm going to send you a wallet with some Bitcoin, and you should invest in it. And that was when Bitcoin, as I was saying, was nothing. You know, it was a couple thousand dollars a coin. Today, you were looking at tens of thousands of dollars. And I know you're very, very bullish on this, that you really see this as the future. And I've had other experts on who think that this is not going to go anywhere. Maybe make the case for it. I mean, why do you think crypto is indeed the future?
Why do I think cryptocurrency is the future? Well, that is a great question. So there's so many different ways to look at this. Okay, so Drew, which way do you want to go? Do you want to go from a technology perspective or Catholic perspective, money efficiency perspective? The concept of being decentralized versus centralized, because in your introduction, you know, you touched on maybe five or six different topics. Right. Why was Bitcoin invented to begin with? Well, you might remember the great recession, right, in 2008, mm-hmm. 2009. What was one of the problems with that? Well, the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates, created inflated our economy by providing liquidity into the marketplace. Housing prices doubled, tripled, quadrupled in just a few short years. And what was happening then? So investment banks were batching all these people who were buying mortgages, like particularly more on the West Coast and East Coast, who was like a no document loan. You just had to show up and you could get a loan for like an $800,000 house. And if the house declined in value by 1%, you are already underwater in default on your mortgage.
Right.
Well, what did these big firms do? They patched up all this stuff. They were able to get credit agencies to stamp it as AAA rated investment grade tranches and silos of sausage. And then they sold it to pension plans for teachers and firemen and policemen. And then on top of that, not only did they get a huge commission for that, they also sold those products short so that as the market declined, they profited. So we've seen a lot of bad stuff in financial services over the years. So Bitcoin is an answer to that, because part of the problem with the Great Recession is something called counterparty risk. That's when I don't trust credit card company to be able to deliver my donation to, say, Relevant Radio. So I'm going to use Relevant Radio a lot in this conversation.
Good.
Because, again, there's the problem with trusted third parties don't always act very trustworthy. From the Catholic perspective, I just submitted an article to the Wall Street Journal called Why Bitcoin is the Most Catholic Form of Money Ever Invented. For me, Bitcoin, from a philanthropy and from a Catholic standpoint, it's the best invention in 2,000 years. For financial services, I was a former floor trader. I would have to stop trading at 3 o'clock or 3:15, turn in all my trading cards, which would go to the clearing firm and then to the option clearing corp that would settle everything, all the transactions. The next day, the money would, you know, settle overnight between the banks and the clearing firms. And we're talking about billions, if not trillions of dollars of securities being transferred. And then we would start trading again at 8:30 once we cleared up all the mistakes. With Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, the transaction and the settlement is all in one instantaneous exchange. El Salvador has now, and I could go on for hours about this, Drew. El Salvador has now accepted Bitcoin as legal tender.
Yeah.
What does that mean? It means that a $440 million a year in fees that companies like Western Union, Walmart, PayPal, your bank, every financial services company that sends money to Bitcoin, sends money to those countries, U.S. dollars, that means that money gets to stay in El Salvador. It means that we don't have to pay almost $500 million in fees to a poor country like El Salvador. So there's 1,001 different reasons why cryptocurrency, and especially Bitcoin, is internet money for an internet age. It's digital money for a digital age. And we have to leave the old industrial age behind, banks and the franchises on the corner and ATM machines that don't always work. We have to leave that behind.
Yeah.
Because now we can send money just as quickly as it takes to send a text message. That's the future of money, not gold.
I was reading an article earlier today on it. They're talking about this Great Reset wash, how we're heading towards being how a cashless society is coming. And I do think a cashless society is an inevitability. And this expert that was making the case, he basically said there are three generations to the internet. The first generation, he says, was typified by the decentralized large mainframe computers of the 70s and the 80s, and they were scattered around the world. It was slow, it was limited. And this was the era before the laptop home computer came, right? And it was highly decentralized, that first generation. He says, but that changed when the second generation of the internet came around, and there was this rapid shift to monetization and centralized controls. He said you saw companies like Amazon and Google and Facebook, they gained this immense amount of power and influence over how the internet works. And, you know, the primary beneficiary, like Facebook and Google, they collected data, you know, without our knowledge, and they were selling it to advertisers. He says now the third generation of the internet is going to be driven by blockchain technology. And it's set to reverse those centralized controls. He says that the third generation is likely to be not only centered around blockchain, but it will take power away from companies that have been these primary beneficiaries over the years. So this may be the third, incarnation. Do you see that? Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of the primary motivations for blockchain technology is that it removes the middleman. It gives power back to individual people who can now monetize their own art, monetize their own data, monetize their own music and their intellectual property. You're right. Before, if I was a a YouTube influencer, or if I was a Spotify influencer, or I was a musician and I uploaded my music on Apple iTunes Store. I mean, I'm not an Apple guy, so I'm not even quite sure what it's called, but whenever you download music on the Apple Store, right, they charge 99 cents for a song. And what does the artist get? Like 4 cents, 5 cents? Mm-hmm. Now, somebody like Bruce Springsteen or Barbara Streisand or One Republic can create 1,000 limited edition copies of a song and put it on a blockchain and maintain creative control and charge whatever they want. Wow. Tiger Woods could now sign digitally, maybe his best golf game is ahead of him, and he can create that and mint a non-fungible token and sell that as a limited edition digital good. So, yeah, this takes a pyramid and flips it upside down on the point. So the point is facing down and the base is flat. Right. And so we're seeing, companies like Google, Amazon, Meta / Facebook, mm-hmm. PayPal, MasterCard, all these companies are getting, this is a mad rush to get into this space because it is the future.
Yeah. And that's what this guy said. His name is Brown. I'll have to find the article and see. But I just remember he said the growth of cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology. He says right now, this is his view, that it's only the beginning right now. And he's bullish on this. He sees this having a decade-long bullish run for digital assets. Let me take a break. When we come back, we can talk more. There are others who, of course, disagree adamantly about this, and that may be the case. Is this just an anomaly? Will this be long-term? What about gold? If you want to get in, I am approaching the end of today's conversation with you. I have about 10 minutes to spend with you. If you want to get in, you have a question, feel free to give us a quick ring and Bill will be able to answer your questions. We take a look at the future of cryptocurrency and how it will interface with you. 888-914-9149. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, if you're just joining me, thank you. It's good to be here. I'm talking this afternoon about maybe the future of a cashless society. Will we use, NFTs, cryptocurrencies? The Biden administration wants to regulate Bitcoin, NFTs, cryptocurrencies as a matter of what they're calling national security. And they've recently, I just saw this not too long ago, expressed their intent to develop a cohesive set of policies that will regulate Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies as, current legislation and enforcement of it. It's too scattered across the board. And they make the case it's a matter of national security. My guest today is an expert in cryptocurrencies. It's good to have with me Bill Oliveri. And let me give you a website for him, too. You can get plugged into all that he is doing online. And if your crypto, intrigues you, you can check out Senecal Capital Management because they invest very heavily in blockchain and Bitcoin and other currencies. Good to have you back, Bill. Let's talk about that. I mean, the Biden administration claims it's a matter of national security. How is cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and NFTs, how's that a national concern, a national security concern?
Well, just those words, national security, do have me a little bit worried, I'll be honest with you. But let's look at this. Bitcoin is currently treated as digital property by the Internal Revenue Service. It's like owning a building or a piece of commercial real estate that you're renting out or forest land, right? The SEC believes most cryptocurrencies should be treated as a security that fall under the purview of their enforcement. The CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, treats Bitcoin like a commodity, and they've already allowed the Chicago Mercantile Group to list futures contracts on Bitcoin, Ethereum, a big contract and a mini contract. Mm-hmm. And so the U.S., the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, is like that's the banking organization that's in charge of making sure that banks have adequate controls and reserves when taking custody of cryptocurrency. So we have all these different parts of the government are treating Bitcoin and cryptocurrency differently. And the truth is also we're treating cryptocurrency using the lens of the administration from Herbert Hoover and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, right? So as a financial advisor, you know, and again, we're trying to cross that bridge, right? We're bridging the gap between traditional investing and digital assets. I'm regulated by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, but I have the National Securities Act of 1933, the Secure Exchange Act of 1934, Investment Advisors Act of 1940, the Howey Act, which is what's used to determine whether something's a security, was initiated in 1946.
Wow.
So here we have this incredibly active, moving money at the speed of light, and we're using like 1930s regulation to govern and regulate this new technology. It's like having a telegraph committee decide on your text messaging, right? Or how voice over internet protocol works. So, you know, Drew, we really do need consistent, holistic regulation, especially in something called stable coins, which is like a money market fund for cryptocurrency. I totally agree with that. You know, investors have to be protected. But at the same time, man, we really have to tread lightly here, because I'm talking about the future of everything. The whole ball of wax, the gold medal, the prize of all prizes is blockchain technology. It's bigger than artificial intelligence. It's bigger than cloud computing. It is the future of everything. And so we have to tread very carefully to make sure that we don't squash entrepreneurial innovation and make sure that that stays here in the United States. Right? We want this.
Well, let's do this. Let's grab a few calls because time is the enemy. I'm down just a few minutes left in our broadcast today. Louise is listening in Los Angeles, California. She's got a question for you. Hi, Louise. You're on the air with Bill Oliveri.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Drew. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question if he's heard of Humble Pay. Humble Pay, my understanding from whatever due diligence I've done on them is Brian Foote is the CEO. Some celebrities are calling him the next Elon Musk of blockchain. And some people are calling the Humble Pay the next Amazon. What Amazon was 30 years ago, Humble Pay is, you know, because they're very disruptive. And their goal is to serve not just the rich or people here in America, but to serve 7 billion people around the world.
Right. Luis, thanks. I appreciate the call. That's a great call. Go right ahead, Bill. I'll let you respond.
I got to be honest with you. I have never heard of Humble Pay until just now. I could take a look at it and talk about it, but I've never heard of it until just now. In terms of, I'm looking at it right now on my screen, and it says that there's a non-fungible token gallery, and it's a new digital marketplace. It could be, but see, the beauty is that anybody can create their own digital marketplace. You know, Coinbase is one of my favorite companies. They're traded on the exchange.
Right.
And they have like six silos of really interesting products that are both institutional and retail. So I'm sorry, I can't say that I know absolutely anything about Humble Pay because it's never come up in my feed. So thank you for the suggestion. I'll take a look at it.
Thanks, Luis.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Okay, great. From Twitter, we just got a quick text or a quick tweet here. For your cyber currency enthusiast, why do governments want to move to cyber currency? Why? Because they can track and tax every transaction. We already have the IRS demanding notification for any electronic transfer over $600. At least they wanted to do that. Your thoughts on that? I mean, is it an economic thing? Is it they want to get taxes out of this as well? Will they even be able to do that based on this technology?
The answer is yes and yes and yes and yes. So already 97% of all the US dollars that exist is a string of digital code used by commercial banks. 40% of all the US dollars that we have now in existence were created since May 2020, right, during the COVID crisis. Bitcoin was $4,300 a token. Now it's $41,000 a token, and it's down off its high. So, Drew, yes, this is amazing technology, but technology is inert. It could either be used for good or it could be used for evil.
And I
think what's going to happen is we will have a central bank digital currency that will monitor every single transaction between citizens in the United States and globally. And the code could be designed so that every time you make a transaction, the government gets like a penny or two pennies or a percentage of the transaction.
Gotcha.
So before, you know, waitresses and firemen working on the weekends and people doing cash jobs, That's going to be gone. Any kind of cryptocurrency or digital currency that the government decides or creates, they'll get paid, right? You're going to have to pay the piper. And it'll be fast, but it's also going to be highly surveilled, not just to the $600 or $300 minimum. Like every penny theoretically can be monetized, monitored and surveilled. And that is the downside of what's going on.
Yeah. Well, a lot of calls still want to get on. Therese and everyone else, I apologize. Therese has a question about the future of this, but let me just give you the final thoughts. We got less than a minute for you, Bill.
You want me to give the final thoughts, Drew?
Final thoughts, yep.
Final thoughts. Okay, so blockchain is not going away. Bitcoin is the most amazing piece of technology that's available. And I know I only have like 1 minute, and if I could just promote myself a little bit, and that is I've got a Spotify channel called The Blockchain Advisor, where I do interviews and also write a free newsletter, right? It's called it's The Blockchain Advisor Newsletter. So you can reach out to me or find me online. The website doesn't do justice to the trading, right, and the investing and the conversation that we're doing, but this is the future. It's not going away. John Paul II said, do not be afraid.
Amen to that. So check out Bill Olivieri, The Blockchain Advisor. All right, I'm out of time for the day. Great having you here, Bill. Thank you for your time. Until our paths again cross, remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a great week.